Her journey is about overcoming addiction to alcohol, coming out of hiding as a woman of faith, and using her story to share what God can and will do for women who are still in the pit of addiction. You'll hear it all today on The Bravehearted Woman. Hey, beautiful Bravehearts, it's Dawn Damon, Braveheart mentor and vision architect. And this is the Bravehearted Woman podcast. Here we talk all things mindset, health, goals, dreams, and habits for midlife women so we can design the second half of life as the best half of life. I know how scary it can be to arrive at midlife and find yourself stuck and unfulfilled. It's difficult to take brave steps that lead to transformation, but I've done it and you can too. Now I'm here to help you ignite the flame of your imagination so you can see what's possible. You can reach your goals and achieve all your dreams. Are you ready? Come on, let's get brave. Well, my guest today is the visionary behind She Surrenders, a transformative ministry dedicated to guiding women towards faith-based recovery. She's a speaker, a coach, an author, and the award-winning book, Sober Cycle, Pedaling Through Recovery One Day at a Time. And this year, she founded the establishment of the Selah House Recovery, a 30-day inpatient faith-based rehabilitation center for women in Western Michigan. Please welcome Sherry Hoppin. Hello, Sherry.
Hi. Hi, Dawn. It's great to be here with you. Thanks for that great intro.
Absolutely. We're so glad that you're with us because, Sherry, you battled addiction for a long time, and we want to jump into your story. What finally brought you to your knees and really surrender?
You know, I always say that recovery is a process, but addiction is a process too. And, you know, what looks like the end, you know, for me might not look like the end for someone else. But what brought me to my knees was basically the surrender of basically saying to God, I'm going to do it your way. Because I had tried so many times to quit drinking. And my life was one big secret. And as a woman of faith, I carried that burden so heavily because I thought, shouldn't I have known better? Or God, where were you when I was going down? And all the things. I worked in ministry for Pete's sakes. My husband was an elder, but yet I'm drinking in my closet. And I fought just as hard to keep my secret as I did to get out of the addiction. And the two do not go together well. So when I finally did find myself flat on my face on my living room floor and just say, I surrender, God, take it. I did add, I'll do whatever you want. And that was something I had not said before. And I had surrendered, but with conditions. Just please let no one find out. Or maybe I can just go back to drinking socially. It was so important to me to keep the face, you know, not let anybody see what was going on or not lose any of my lifestyle. But that lifestyle was long gone. I should have known better. But I said that this time, your way, not anything to do with me. And that was the time.
That was the moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've said so much just now that we could unpack, but really, you know, being a woman of faith, I can imagine that that was a very heavy burden to carry. And we do fight for our secrets, sometimes because we want to stay in them, but sometimes because, gosh, if I could just have deliverance from this, God, with keeping all of the shellac and the veneer in place and all the perfect lifestyle looking there. But then you wouldn't be sitting here today giving God the glory for what he did and really helping others coming out. Your story is now going to be a redemptive tool in the hands of God to help others get set free. So thanks for your bravery, Sherry. Mm-hmm. But what's been the most significant change, the positive change in your life since you've gotten sober? And, you know, we're jumping right to the sober part. I imagine that rehab and all that, that was no easy leap, just coming from that place to all of a sudden now, hey, I'm clean.
No, it wasn't. And, it's all chronicled in my book how I got there and how I got out of it, but I didn't go to rehab. It was not an option as far as what we didn't really find the one that would fit anyway. So it was me and God. And I had a supportive husband who thankfully did not give up on me. He was very close. Our marriage was in a very bad place. I didn't have much hope for it, and neither did he. And that was kind of the come to Jesus moment as well in that last day of drinking. And I would say that's probably one of the biggest. There's so many that I could celebrate in recovery, but the biggest one is my marriage.
Yeah.
It's back. I mean, it's not back. It's brand new. And he's the best, and we're best friends. We are what it should be. And we've walked through some really hard things together. Not just that, but, you know, losing people we love, the hard things with our kids or, you know, grandkids, whatever. And I can't imagine us not being there for each other. And he's so supportive in everything I do. And I try to be for him as well. But that is the biggest gift that came out of this. I had no idea what I married when I was 18 years old, but I do know.
That's beautiful. What a great story to hear that, because many women, many men in addiction, they do lose their marriages. They do. And God can still heal and you can go on to having a beautiful life. But how incredibly wonderful for you that God was able to set you free. Of course, we know he can, that you were willing to take that step and that he restored and resurrected or made brand new the whole marriage. Sherry, were there moments when you were socially drinking that did you know that it was beginning to become a problem? Was it a slow slide, or did you know like right away, like this is just all too important for me? And do you have that addictive personality that they talk about?
Definitely the addictive personality. I always say I don't like to do anything unless I can do it well. Well, I did drinking well, you know, there's that. But I'm really glad that you brought this up because I do get asked that question. And I look back and I can say 100% I had no business drinking in the first place. There's a ton of addiction, especially alcoholism, in my family, both sides. I witnessed it, you know, growing up, I witnessed it today. And to see that, and knowing especially what we do now, I was playing Russian roulette every time I put that drink to my mouth. And I can remember someone saying to me when I was much younger, "Do you ever worry about becoming an alcoholic?" And I said, "Absolutely not. I'm very aware." And I thought that I was. But if you think that you are stronger than a substance that has the record that alcohol does in addiction, you can beat addiction in your family, but it starts with not partaking in it. Yeah. And the other thing I did wrong was drink alone. I always say to women, you have no reason to drink alone. If you're drinking alone, stop. If, you know, like give yourself these little tests. But I knew I was in trouble when it was too late. I was blindsided. I drank socially for years and it was fine until one day I remember asking my husband, "Do you ever think about, like, I can't wait for the weekend, have a drink?" And he's like, "No." He's like, "Do you?" And I said, "Well, sometimes I think about," and I kind of made it about like a camp, like I can't wait to be out by the campfire and that kind of thing. And quickly, you know, like leveled that. And later on, I thought to myself, I'm thinking about drinking, you know, on the weekend and it's only Tuesday or Wednesday. Well, later on, I was thinking about drinking in the morning when it was in the evening. And, you know, you start breaking your boundaries. And I remember thinking to myself also, you're going to have to fix this. And this being the hiding, the drinking. And instead of fixing it, which was too late to fix, by fixing, I thought I could just cut back, but that never happened. And this went on for years.
How did that affect your relationship with the Lord? Did you feel like you were being prompted by God to stop, or did you find yourself distancing from deep communion and worship?
You know, for a while, I would say, you know, I look at, there's about 10 years there that from, I think, the journey of the addiction start to finish, you know, the last three being in the ugliness of it. But I would say in the first three quarters of it, I was rebellious, kind of a, you know, I don't have a problem. This is me. I'm handling it. We're doing life. It's fine. We're raising kids. We're doing the best we can, and just kept brushing it off. And I don't really have a lot of time to spend in the morning on devotions and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I go to church and blah, 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 all the things. Mm-hmm. But I will say that those last years, I was still reading my Bible and I was searching and praying and working so hard to try to figure out. I knew that God was the way out. And every time I drank, I knew I was turning my back on the plans he had for me. And I hadn't felt that in earlier years, but he was working on me. And he wasn't giving up on me, even when I was ready to give up on me. Mm-hmm. And I would wake up sometimes and I would say, God, why do you keep saving me? I just don't understand. Because there was days where I could have cared less. Mm-hmm. And he kept raising me back up for some reason. Yeah. And I did feel his closeness, but there was a lot of times where I felt his disappointment too. Mm-hmm. And I felt alone. And that was me that walked away, not God.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So peddling your way through recovery, tell us about your book.
Well, I don't ever do things traditionally. So I said I worked for a ministry. I worked for nonprofit pro-life pregnancy center here in West Michigan. And they had started a, what I thought was nuts, a bike ride from kind of across the U.S. each year. This was going to be the second year, and it was to raise money. And it was going to go from Michigan to Texas. And through a string of events, I was invited to join, and I should not have been invited to join. I was in no shape to do this. I was a overweight, non-athletic, in the throes of alcoholism, but living with a false face of, you know, not wanting to do this. But my husband said to me, you know, you said you were praying for help spiritually, emotionally, and physically. What do you think God's trying to tell you? So I was kind of in a really awkward position. And I said, yes. And I had 51 days to get ready for this bike ride from Michigan to Texas.
Oh my goodness.
So I started training, and I trained hard, and I did do it. I left with a horrible hangover. The first 3 days on that bike were absolute hell. I should not have made it. Yeah, that's where God is. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
And I did this bike ride from Michigan to Texas. Is the bike ride what got me sober? Does the book, the book does not end with the end of the bike ride, like a Hallmark movie, you know, like, yay, yep, look, I got sober.
Right.
Not at all. I had a couple more years to, you know, experience yet. The bike ride was a big part of it. And there was a few more after that, because those bike rides taught me that I could be my authentic self, and that these good Christian people that I was on this ride with, they mm-hmm. just loved me for who I was. They knew nothing about what was going on in me. And I don't think I've ever felt closer to God than what I was those summers mm-hmm. on my bike. And did the bike save me? No, but the bike was a huge tool that God blessed me with.
Wow, what a powerful story. You hear these stories of people sometimes, you know, starting to train and you still are battling addiction, but there's also now this fresh call coming into your life as you feel your body getting stronger, you feel your mind getting clearer, you feel like maybe victory is really possible, freedom is really possible. What would you tell women listening who say, man, I don't know if freedom is possible for me? Like, you're telling my story. I'm hiding. I'm in the bathroom drinking before I go to bed or whatever.
First of all, I would just, that's so hard for me to answer because I answer this question a lot and it's hard to put into words because in a meeting, like I lead a Monday night meeting and once in a while I'll ask, what is the number one thing you wish you would have done differently when you were trying to get sober? And every single woman will always say, I wish I would have listened to the woman who said, you can do this. It's worth it. You're not as bad as you think you are. And someone else is doing the exact same thing. And with God, all things are possible. I hear this all the time. Mm-hmm. And I would hear that too. And I would think to myself, but you have no idea. You have no idea how bad my drinking is. You have no idea how much I've lied. You have no idea how much I have to hide. And I thought there was no one else like me, but there was, and there is. Yeah. And I would say, you are not alone. And I would say, get a hold of me, contact me, and I will talk to you because there's a community of women out there. And my heart is for the faith-based woman, just because mm-hmm. I feel like that's who she wants to talk to. Absolutely. We fall harder. It's mm-hmm. the way it is. But that's what I would say. You're not as special as you think you are. You know, you're uniquely you, yes, but you can get out of this because honestly, once you surrender, truly, truly, truly surrender, your life is going to change in ways you never thought possible.
Mm-hmm. That's such great advice and great words. Is that why you started the Sela House for Recovery? Tell us about your ministry.
Yeah, so that is definitely part of the reason. So rehab really wasn't an option. This is 13 years ago that I've, or not 13, 12 years ago that I've been sober. And rehab, there wasn't many of them, especially, you know, around here. But 5 years ago, we went through addiction with another member of our family. And we wanted faith-based recovery for her. And we couldn't find it. We could not find it. We would call and they would say, whatever she worships, we're going to encourage. And that was not enough for us. Mm-hmm. And we also couldn't find that middle lane. There was a lot of openings at, you know, the mission, which are awesome, wonderful resources. But that wasn't right for her. Or there's the $40,000 yeah. option for 28 days. Where's the middle lane? Mm-hmm. Where's the middle lane? And as I say to pastors often, when you look out in your congregation, where are you going to drop off that woman or that woman or that woman, your daughter, mm-hmm. your wife, your sister, and, you know, the average American woman. And that's where Sela House came from. And it's a passion that started with my husband and I. We just would talk about it. Like there needs to be something like that. And lo and behold, one day this house just kind of appeared and I came
lo and behold.
And said, yeah. I said, I think I found it. And he's like, found what? And I said, I think I found our rehab place. And he knew it too right away. And 2 years later we opened and here we are. And it's been amazing. It's been one of the hardest things I've ever done. Mm-hmm. But it's also been the most rewarding. And I absolutely love what I get to do every day in yeah. so many ways.
That's so incredible. I've said those same words as a church planter. I said, it's the hardest thing I've ever done and the most rewarding thing I've ever done because it's transforming lives, changing lives. And that's what you're doing. It's beautiful. So your book is an award-winning book. You have 12 years sober. You've learned so much and you can relate to so many women. How can they get a hold of you if they say, yes, you are someone I need to speak to?
Well, I have a website, shesurrenders.com. There's a contact button on there and there's a couple different resources. There's a couple different groups you could join.
Are those virtual or live?
One of them is virtual and one of them is like a forum, much like Facebook, but it's not Facebook. It's just through the website, very private. And so there's two options there. Plus you can email me. And I'm also She Surrenders Sherry on Instagram and She Surrenders on Facebook. Sayla House Recovery is on Facebook and Instagram as well. And you can reach me any of those ways. I would love to hear from you. And of course, the book is on Amazon and all the major booksellers.
And we will make sure that we have all of those links for you in the show notes, all of you wonderful, brave-hearted women listening, so that you can definitely find Sherry, or if you know of someone who needs this information. The book is called Sober Cycle, Pedaling Through Recovery One Day at a Time. Get your copy today. Sherry, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it. And for everyone listening, yes, Dawn Damon, your Braveheart mentor, I'll leave you like I always do. It's time for you. Maybe I won't leave you like I always do. Is it time for you to be honest about you? Find your brave. Live your freedom. Hey, thanks for hanging out with me today and igniting your brave. Trust me, you'll never be the same. Now for my free gift, make sure you click the link in our show notes. And to find out more about me, my books, or my amazing coaching course, visit braveheartedwoman.com. If you found help in this podcast, please like it, follow, and review me. It helps get the word out and up those algorithms so more amazing Bravehearts can find this message. You can also share it on your social media platforms or with someone you know who can really benefit. You can find my latest book, The Making of a Brave-Hearted Woman, Courage, Confidence, and Vision in Midlife, on Amazon and all the usual suspects. All right, this is Dawn Damon, as always, saying, find your brave and live your dreams.